This is Pure Decking for January the 17th, 2013, and this is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps, and tonight we're starting early, and we have The Lore, DSV, and Analog.
Hey.
Hi.
So, yeah, I'm sure the recording and the stream is fine, but what we were hearing of the intro song just went to shit.
Yeah, I was listening to stream, it sounded great, so yeah. I don't know what's going on.
The Q input in SAM gets like no processing power at all. It's like kind of a secondary thing. It doesn't care about it. So a lot of times the quality on it will just go to nothing. And I really wish I could fix that because we make use of that. So
it's anyway, pretty much the first thing to get hit.
Yeah, it always drops it first. And I mean, I understand why it does that because honestly, what... You know, if you're thinking about it from a traditional radio station, what your DJs is hearing in the headphones doesn't really matter that much as long as what your listeners and the recording is getting is good. And when our recordings are taken from the same output as the stream, not the queue output, so it's enough about the back end. A little bit of station news. Anyone, you might have noticed the site looks a little different. We've made a few small tweaks here and there and completely redesigned it. So it's a very clean look, and if you want to see one of the big reasons we went with this theme, pull it up on a cell phone. It actually resizes quite nicely.
Yes, it looks really nice on the mobile app or the mobile view on the phones, even on my little tiny screen.
It feels a little sparse when you pull it up on a regular machine, but it's not too bad. So I'm actually really pleased with the way the redesign came out. We've still got some placeholder art. We've still got a lot of content that needs to be filled out. But, I mean, that's just stuff that's going to take time. I mean, I've been working on it, and I know Swolf is helping me work on it. He's done a lot of the graphics. And I'm going to be getting Big to help me fill out a lot of the artist information because he's the one who's been recruiting these people. So... we're going to get as much of that stuff filled out as quickly as possible. But, I mean, it just takes time. And also, the shout box is gone. I am not bringing it back. I know I've been threatening to get rid of it for a long time. The biggest problem with the shout box was actually spam and my own peace of mind, is because it's an input box. It's a place you could potentially do code injections, and I never liked having something that could be such a blatant cross-site scripting thing. I mean, at least with the feedback box, all you're going to do is, you know, send me junk in my email. And there might be a code injection there, but I haven't found anything yet. Not that I've been hammering on site terribly hard, to be honest. But the shout box was always a source of kind of a headache for me, so I'm really glad to get rid of it. And there's not really a good place for it in the new layout. So I'm actually pushing the subreddit, the Galaxy 15 subreddit on Reddit, as a replacement to the shout box. So, and also that's a good place to discuss our content because other people can see it. And I don't feel like turning on a comment section on the site. I don't want to have to moderate it. I don't want to have to deal with the spam. So I'll just let Reddit handle all that crap. So,
yeah, the Reddit page is pretty good. I've commented a couple of times on some stuff in there. It looks pretty good. And my problem with not having a shout box would be a place to have like a discussion where I can see everything. And well, Reddit covers that.
So that is exactly why we want to put Reddit in its place and put Reddit in its place. Yeah, right. that's why we're replacing the shout box with Reddit. I don't think anybody can put Reddit in its place except whoever controls those servers. So, and we had, it actually was a first for our station. We actually had just a good old-fashioned piece of hate mail show up, actually. And it was not for one of the shows I would have expected it from. It was actually the worst show. And they were really upset because the politics that were being discussed on the show did not agree with their politics. And so they had to send us some good old-fashioned hate mail about how they won't listen to the rest of the stream because one show on the station, a station that emphasizes free speech and good music, but because of one show has a political view they don't agree with, they're not going to listen to the station. That's fine. I mean, you know, that's cool. I understand. But I do just want to point out that Galaxy 15 Radio, as a station, has no official stance on anything at all. You know, we're neutral. I mean, it's like those people from Futurama, right? But certain shows may have a political view. You could argue that Lore Show did. Pure Decking, I'm sure my own politics come out every once in a while. I generally try to stay away from politics on Decking, but I know it comes up. And, you know, Big's all over the map. that his show is kind of hits the gamut, right? So, but pretty much certain shows can have a political view. I'm not going to censor that. I try to be fair to any, I guess, you know, valid views. You know, if somebody really wants to talk about the lizard people, I'll probably give them the airtime to do it, but I'm not terribly interested in that, to be honest. But, you know, I am kind of big on free speech. Even if I don't agree with you, I'm perfectly willing to give you time on the show. I'll be perfectly honest that Between the Sheets show, I was not 100% comfortable with. But I let it play until, you know, until Syntax couldn't do the show anymore. So, but...
That's the thing with free speech is you may not like all the speech, but you have to accept all of it if you want it free.
Yeah, now that's absolutely the case. So if I'm willing to put somebody on the station, you know, I don't necessarily have to agree with them. So... that means that as a listener to the station, you may or may not hear political views you don't agree with. And that's, you know, if you can't handle that, then there's nothing wrong with turning off the station when that particular show is playing. If you can't handle that, that's actually a good thing, and maybe you can consider the other arc. You know, it's good to understand where the other side is coming from, even if you don't agree with them. I mean, you can at least appreciate the logic of their argument, right? So... And it's like, nope, I understand where you're coming from, and you're wrong, and here's why. You get better debates that way. So, yeah, as opposed to the Fox News-style screaming at people or just censoring people you don't agree with, like, I believe MSNBC is the one that does that one. But, well, I think pretty much all of them do that these days, don't they?
Yeah.
So, short version is... you know, yeah, you're perfectly free to turn off the station if you're hearing something you don't like on it, but understand, I'm not going to censor anybody. I mean, if I've offered them time on the station, I'm not going to say, yeah, you can't say that. I mean, with the exception of stuff that might get me arrested, so I would ask Analog to please stop threatening the president. But
but he deserves it.
That might be true, but I don't want to get arrested or at least being interviewed by the Secret Service. So that would actually
tell
is a
Bob
crime.
To go get a donut at the store. Come on.
God. You know, other than stuff that will get me, you know, arrested, I'm pretty much open to whatever on the stream for the most part, because like I said, I've got no problem saying if you don't like what's playing, just turn it off for an hour and come back later. So... That said, we were going to talk about all the Java attacks going on as kind of a discussion, but I think Analog and Lore were having a much more interesting discussion before we started the show. So, Lore had asked about the current run of Android phones, and Analog's been looking into it a lot because I think he's getting ready to get a new phone. So, I've mentioned on the show several times I have a Galaxy S3, and I'm really enjoying this phone. I've been playing Ingress. I actually hit level 2 today, and set up the first control field in my area of influence. So nobody else had one up yet. So you know, fuck yeah, got one set up. And nobody else in this, nobody else has any clue what I'm talking about.
I know what it is, you know.
Yeah. For those of you who play Ingress, Enlightenment for the win. So, anyways, yeah. So, Analog, what do you got for us on the phones? Analog, you're muted.
Whoops. Yeah, so that was a fail on my part. Let's try that again. So the question posed right now is AT&T. Let's use AT&T as a base. That's what Laura was asking me about earlier. I've been looking at AT&T, at least from my area. They're probably one of the top two, possibly three carriers in my area. And in most people's areas, they're a pretty good source of service. Now, not necessarily customer service, but let's talk about the phones and not the actual people that work there. So, there are four main phones that kind of all fall along the same category of Android phone. That is the HTC One X, the Sony Xperia Ion, the, of course, Samsung Galaxy S3 that you've heard more talk about there, and then there is the Motorola Atrix HD. Okay, so out of these four phones, they're all pretty close as far as sizing is concerned. They're not really going to be, you know, ultra portable. They're a pretty hefty phone. They're not the biggest that you can get, of course. Talking about the Samsung Galaxy Note or Note 2, those things are monstrosities.
I almost got the Note. I was afraid it wouldn't fit in my pocket. Okay, he said it's not portable. It's a phone. It's portable. You might need big pants to carry it. That's not a problem for me because I have big pants, but interpret that one as you will. But
I'm keeping my mouth shut on that comment. But
I realized what I said after I said it.
So going back to these four phones, let's talk about these four first. Then we'll talk about a little bit about the Note and a few other ones that I'll throw in there as well for you. But out of the four phones, again, each of them are about the same size. Screen size, not much different. The Motorola Atrix and the Sony Xperia both have a 4.5-inch screen display. Okay. The Samsung Galaxy S3 is the largest out of the four with a 4.8, and the HTC One X is a 4.7 screen. They're all 720, so it's 1280 by 720, making them very good pixel density there. They're very clear, very crisp screen on all four of the phones. The biggest thing that a lot of people are talking about and a lot of the reviews are saying is out of the four phones, the S3 actually lacks in outdoor viewing compared to the four phones. So looking at that, it's because of the actual screens themselves and the technology behind them. I'm not going to get into each one of those because right now my brain doesn't really remember each one, what each one of them has, and I don't want it to take the wrong thing. You can review them. Some of them have OLEDs and all the different types of different screens that are out right now. Again, they're all very sharp, very clear. The colors are really good on all of them. All the phones definitely display more than the naked human eye can see. So when it comes down to it, they're all going to be pretty much the same. As far as, you know, the only one difference, like I said, is the S3. A little bit less visible on a bright, sunny day outside.
I can actually confirm that. I have had problems seeing mine when it's outside, but it's usually not a problem because I'm used to that with, like, almost all electronics I've had ever. I mean, it's not any different than an iPhone. I guess to explain my own process for picking the S3, I fell in love with the screen of the thing. I initially had an iPhone 4, and I was going – I just went in because my contract was up. I could upgrade. I just thought I'd look and see what's available. I started playing with an S3, a few other phones, and it's just, man, it's like, man, that screen is just awesome. And, you know, you kind of, then you start messing with your own phone again, and it's like, huh, well, fuck. So I ended up with an S3.
There you go. Yeah. That's normally what happens. Okay, so let's kind of talk about price. The price seems to be, a big concern for a lot of people sometimes. All the phones, I think, are a very reasonable price on a 2-year contract. You're looking at starting out, of course, at if you're looking at online versus in a store, of course, there's a difference with that. So I compare things online. I go by an online price. It's normally cheaper, and I'm getting the same thing, and I don't have to put it up with stupid people, typically. So looking at it, you have the Sony Xperia, the HTC One X, and a refurbished version of the Motorola Atrix, all for 99 cents. Okay, so if refurbished doesn't scare you a whole lot, you know, which for me, it doesn't really, you know, bother me too bad. You know, I know it's been done right, and if there's any problems, I still have a warranty, typically, with most companies, at least most reputable companies. So all three of those phones coming in at 99 cents. You're moving up into the S3 and the HTC One X Plus. So that's the next version of the HTC One X. We'll go over that phone again here in a little bit. Both of those phones are coming in at $199. The Galaxy Note, this is the Galaxy Note 1, not the 2, but just the 1. Again, that's a $199 price. It's a little bit less on some of the other hardware specs, but still a pretty good device itself. You know, if you have a hard cabin, you want to get a larger screen than any of the other phones have. And then, of course, the Note 2, the behemoth of all of them, coming in at $300 on a two-year contract. So, out of all of them, like I said, they're still a pretty good price. And, you know, whatever your budget can afford, you'll get a good phone. One of the things that I'm kind of drawn to is the camera. So let's talk about that a little bit here. As far as the rear cameras go, out of all of them, Sony blows them all out of the water. It has a 12-megapixel camera with a 3D sweep panorama mode. I'm not really sure what that is exactly. I haven't looked into that. I like the 12-megapixel.
It's a software trick. It just takes lots of pictures and stitches them together to make really big pictures.
That's what I figured it was, you know. But the 12-megapixel camera is what sold me on that phone, particularly camera-wise. All the other ones are coming in at about 8-megapixels cameras, which is still a good camera, but, you know, for what it is, I would rather have the 12. All of them are going to be doing at least 720p on the front side, and most of them are going to be doing 1080 on the back side for video recording. So, all of them are pretty good zooms. So, there's not really like, a whole lot of difference in when you're getting into that type of phone. And if you have questions, maybe just stop me while we're going through these, and I'll try to answer a little more detail about it. But looking at the actual software side, the OS side, all phones are at least running Ice Cream Sandwich. A few of them have been bumped up to Jelly Bean. So, it kind of depends on if they've upgraded some of them before you get shipped to you, which one will come with. So I'm not going to say necessarily this phone will have it for sure or not. All phones
I found on Android that what the phone comes with isn't really that big of a deal software-wise. Once the phone's been out a few months, if you don't mind to root it and flash your own ROM on it, you can get any version of the Android you want pretty much. So, I mean, you know, of course there's apps to cover anything, so software differences on these phones I don't personally care about. I mean, Lord, you're the one who asked, what do you think?
I'm trying to get Jelly Bean, and this is why I'm kind of up in the air between three phones, but really only two. I was looking at the HTC One X Plus or the Samsung Galaxy Note 2, and then I was kind of looking at the LG Optimus G, just kind of as a third, just to kind of see what's going on with them. And I believe they all have the Jelly Bean. I'm actually on a website called phonearena.com that I can compare stuff with. I didn't know if anybody had any personal experience with any of these, because I haven't touched any of them. Generally, the build quality looks better on the HTC One X Plus versus the other ones.
Right. No, I've played with the Note 2 in stores, and I've also played with the One X. I haven't played with One X Plus yet, so I can't really quote on that a whole lot. Typically, you know, HTC does a really good job on the phone, so I'll give them that. You know, they're pretty top quality. But again, this, the Galaxy Note 2, man, that thing is, I don't know, it is something that I love. I just kind of see myself putting it in my pocket. That's the only
there's times it's like, man, I should cut that S2 or the Note, but I instead of the S3. But you know, other times it's like, well, I'm glad this thing fits in my pocket. So you know, during the winter I wear a jacket. It's not a big deal. I'll put it in any pocket I want. And Analog will tell you I've got amazing amounts of load bearing equipment. But in the summer it could be a problem, you know.
That's what she said.
Oh,
sorry.
There's, go there. There's also other things that I've been looking at too, because like the HTC One X Plus does not have a removable battery, nor can you do expandable memory. Though it comes with 64GB, which is really good, because that's about the only card size you're going to be able to get for any of these phones anyway. But the thing about the Galaxy Note 2 is that you can get those micro SD cards, and you can continue to expand the storage size, which I think comes with 16, and then you can get it up to 64, which would actually make it easier for me to transfer my card that I'm using right now on my old phone into it. But I would prefer something with a removable battery and the SIM card slot, or not SIM card, but the SD card slot. It's just, I don't know if I can justify that much more money or that much more size, though. I do kind of really want a giant screen, too.
Yeah. No, I definitely hear you there. I like you said, I like the ability to actually swap out my cards and not have to worry about, you know, being stuck on one size and then, oh, I filled that up. Now what do I have to delete?
Yeah, well, that's actually something I ran into with the iPhones was I'd fill up the phone and be like, oh, well, fuck, because that thing didn't have a slot on it at all.
Now, I've seen these cables that you can get that will take your micro USB port and make it into a normal USB port so you can, like, plug in flashcards or, you know, get a converter for other SIM cards that you can plug in there. But that would be lugging that around, and if you needed that data, you would just be using it off of that USB thing. So that's an even larger thing to carry around, too, which
it's,
I don't mind.
It's not bad. I actually have one of those little OTG cables, and yeah. They're pretty. It's actually not that big. It's not too bad. It's just a little adapter cable. I will say, if you forget to unplug it and you've got like a flash drive plugged into it, that thing will suck your battery dry. At least it did on my phone.
Oh, okay. That is another thought, too. I mean, usually I'm going about the day with it plugged in, so that's not a huge deal. But again, with the Samsung Galaxy Note 2, the battery is generally larger than any other phone out there and will last longer than any other phone out there just because it's so much larger. And that's cool. So, I mean, if there was another phone that had a large battery like that, I wouldn't be so concerned with it if it was non-removable because it lasts so long. But I also like the option of being able to take out the battery just in case something goes horribly wrong and, like, whatever, the reset buttons aren't working, which I've never actually experienced it not working. But I've had issues with Android before where it'll just freeze up and there's really nothing you can do except take the battery out.
Well, you know, if it was a Windows mobile phone, I'd agree with you, but I haven't seen any of that kind of problem with an Android phone.
Yeah, no, typically most times, you know, I've run into some of the lower-end Android stuff I've had to take and, you know, just do a hard power reset, but that's a bit... Yeah, that's been the extent of it, of course. So, you know, one thing I will say about the 1X Plus, it is sporting the NVIDIA Tegra chip, which I think is an awesome processor as far as graphic producing power, simply because my tablet is an Acer Aconia, and I'm running the NVIDIA Tegra 2. I know this is NVIDIA Tegra 3 on the 1X Plus, and just makes it that much better, I think, or if you do any kind of real heavy gaming on it. So, I know all of them, I believe, have the Snapdragon or, you know, something very similar to it. So, that might be something to kind of help you think about. But, I don't know. I still go back to that Note too, man, and I'm just like, ah, it's a beautiful device.
It's got a Wacom in it, for God's sake. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
It also has that additional button on the bottom, though, which is an issue apparently with Rofax, and he doesn't like the S3s or the Note 2s because of that one button. And the HTC One X Plus doesn't even have that. It has those... I can't remember what they're called, but they're not actually push buttons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you can just kind of touch them. You don't have to worry about them breaking, because I've had the... Not an iPhone, but I've had the iPod Touch with that button, and that did eventually go out on me. And I only had it for a year before it went out on me.
So really? I've never had a problem with the button on any of my iDevices or my S3.
I don't know. It's not like I'm doing anything heavy with them. I did carry it with me everywhere, which I assume most people do with their phones. And I had it in kind of a case, too. So I'm not sure why it decided to go out on me. I did click it an awful lot because I listen to podcasts at work, which I'm allowed to. So don't go tell my boss. But I would click that button awful. Oh, okay. I go clicking that button a lot just because that's how I got the little player up so I could pause it. So I was constantly clicking that button, and I do that with my phone now, too, because I'm using it as my MP3 player or whatever, and I'm clicking the buttons all the time, though it hasn't gone out, and it's just a Droid 2, which has a keyboard, which none of these new phones have, and I don't know, I'm kind of iffy about that too.
I will say I have put a Bluetooth keyboard on my S3, and it was nice.
That is a thought too.
At least it's not the stupid Dell Windows phone that I have for work.
That thing is a piece of junk. I will say the only thing that they did right on it was the curved display glass. I like it because the viewing angles are amazing. That is the only thing they did right. Everything else about that phone sucks. I hate the keyboards that slide out, though, too. This has one. It slides out. The phone slides up. And it's not long ways, you know, in the sense you turn it on the side. No. It's you hold it in your hand like you do in a normal phone, and you slide it up. The thing becomes like 7 to 8 inches long.
Oh, that's stupid.
Come on.
Now, well, I mean, you also, there's other things, too, like additional port docks that you can get for things. And I've seen the dock for the Note 2. It's really extremely awesome. It's got a couple of additional USB ports on it. It's got a full-size HDMI out on it, which I might want to get, too, if I was going to get the Note, just because I actually have a tablet, and it has a full-size HDMI out, and I will plug that into the TV, and I watch, well, okay, it's me. I watch a lot of anime using the tablet. And it's actually really cool. Now, the tablet is slow for what I want it to do because it's older. It has a full HDMI port on it, not a micro one, so yes, it's older. So it's going to be a little slower. And if I could get it on something else, that'd be great too. Now, I know the HTC One X Plus, you can do the micro USB to HDMI, but I don't know. I like the little dock. I think it's really cool.
I've got a third-party MHL adapter for my phone, and I've had problems with that thing. I mean, it'll work, and it'll go out, and I get static on the screen, and it's really weird to see static on a digital television. But, I mean, maybe if you get the official one, it's better, but the third-party one I got has got problems.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind, because if I was to get one of these, which I'm planning on doing that this weekend, I would probably want the official one then, because, you know, so these phones are as powerful, if not more powerful, than the computers I was using as a child to run my favorite games. And you can get those games a lot of the time to at least run on these phones, and you can get a full-sized... this weekend, I spent time with Slothan, and we went out and got a PlayStation 3 controller, you know, because they're USB, plugged it into his computer. We were playing games with that. That's awesome, and it was super cheap.
You get the six-axis app if you root your phone, and you can use that same PlayStation controller if it's the Bluetooth one, or even if it's not, you can just use a USB port to with your phone. I keep meaning to pick one up. I just haven't yet. I will say that I mean, I'm really enjoying my S3. I'm really having a lot of fun with it. And, of course, the computer I started playing games on with a fucking Commodore 64. But yeah. My phone's more powerful than my netbook I bought, 5 years ago. So yeah. It's just like, damn!
Now, you have the S3. What do you think of the build quality? Because the back's plastic versus some of these other ones that, like, to me seem a little bit more ruggedized. Does it feel flimsy or anything to you?
It does and it doesn't. In a way, now understand, I went from an iPhone 4,
right?
Which the whole thing was glass, right? So I was keeping it in an OtterBox. And the S3, I don't feel like I need to keep it in one of those crazy military-grade cases because it doesn't feel like it's going to shatter if I drop it. And I have dropped it a couple of times and it's fine. Now, I've got a bumper on it, but it's not... You know, I don't have a full-on OtterBox. Like I feel like I have to have with an iPhone. So that's a pure judgment call. But I will say my S3 is doing fine, and I don't have it in a crazy case.
Okay, because apparently this last week, and I just found this out, one of my friends has an S3, and they had it in a case. It's one of those flip cover cases, though. I don't think it's like a full-on OtterBox case.
No, those things are the official flip cover cases. Those things are weird. They don't. It's not really a case. It's a screen protector, and it replaces the battery. It replaces the back panel of the phone, the battery cover,
oh.
And just puts this little kind of faux leather screen cover on it, which the screen's pretty big, so I can understand why you'd want that. But when you flip it around, it blocks the camera, so it's like that looks awkward to use.
Yeah, because they apparently, like, just last weekend they dropped it and it did shatter, and it was like normal dropping everyday behavior. They've dropped it before, but whatever reason, it landed on a corner or something and it shattered or cracked. But they had the insurance or replacement plan or whatever it was, so they got it replaced. But still, they all will break, though. That's the thing.
I've got a bumper case on mine, and I've got just a El Cheapo screen protector, and that's done pretty well.
I'm just kind of concerned what kind of cases I want to carry, because I always get a case. I always like having something leather or hard box around it, because I like to flip it open and everything, because I like to hold it like a book. I've been doing that ever since I had the iPod Touch, because I used to read on them.
Yeah. Well, unless you guys wanted to have anything else you wanted to hit real quick, I was going to move on to our current events here.
Good. Okay, I was going to say we pretty much beat phones to death, as we always do whenever it comes up on the show here. So
real quick, though, before we do that, if you had to go buy one right now, what would you buy?
Me personally, or?
Yeah, everybody.
I'd either pick up the S3 again, or I'd get the Note 2. I keep going back and forth on that. But it's a known quantity for me, so it's not really a fair question.
Yeah.
This is why I asked the question in the first place, because I'm really, really questioning my choice between the Note 2 or the HTC One X Plus, because they both look very nice to me, and the Note is a little bit bigger, and that kind of leads me to it, except for I like the build quality on the HTC One a little bit better. So it's between those two. I still can't decide.
Just get your hands on them. You'll know.
Yeah. And the cool thing, though, about AT&T, 30 days. Take it back. You don't like it?
Cool.
Swap it for the next one.
Oh, all right. I'll think about that.
Yeah.
Cool. It'll be day 29. He'll be in there like, let me try the other one again.
I don't think the 30 days reset, though. Just FYI. So.
Ah, crap.
BSV, what phone you touting?
It's just a simple old heavy duty phone. I'm too abusive to my phones to get anything of decent value. If it can't survive the washer machine and dryer together, it's not worth it for me.
I need to tell you a story then before we move on here. When I first bought an OtterBox case, this was back when I was using one of the iPhone 3s, 3G, whatever it was. The reason I bought that particular case, because I walked in there to get a case, and I asked the guy, it's like, I need an iPhone case, I need something that can take a beating. He goes, okay, I've got just the thing for you. It's this OtterBox case, and it was $50. I'm like, I don't know, I don't want to spend $50 on a phone case, right? So he takes his phone out of his belt clip and chucks it against the wall. And then picks up and places a phone call with it. I'm like, okay, that's the case for me. Guy actually threw his phone against the fucking wall and it worked. It's just like, okay, you win. I'm buying that case.
Yeah, it wasn't a store phone either.
Well, it was whatever phone was on his hip. It might have been a store phone. I don't know.
It might be like one of their demo phone things that they get to keep. But I mean, it's not like he went and picked one up off the shelf, though. It's
no,
the
he just
one
took it right off his belt clip and chucked it. And it was just like, holy shit! Okay, that wins. So
nice.
Oh, this is unfortunate. I just drank my last bottle of bourbon barrel ale, and that stuff's not cheap. So fuck. Anyways, moving on, current events. First story up is from thehackernews.com. A new Java O'Day vulnerability has been discovered and already in the wild and in use by an exploit pack, taking advantage of a fresh Java vulnerability in Java and potentially letting hackers take over users' machines. Java 7 Update 10 and earlier contain an unspecified vulnerability that can allow a remote unauthenticated attacker to execute arbitrary code on a vulnerable system. In other words, you hit a web page that's naughty and it's running a virus. The flaw was first spotted by the Malware Don't Need Coffee blog. That is actually an awesome name for a blog. This vulnerability is being attacked in the wild and is reported to be incorporated into exploit kits. The exploit is already available in two exploit packs that are available for $700 a quarter or $1,500 a year. Similar tactics were used in CVE 2012-4681, which was discovered last August. So the source of this exploit is available to download here. So in other words, this is going to be a Metasploit module fairly shortly too. I just want to point it out. The only reason I have this story is these Java exploits are already in the idiot-proof buy-it-and-do-it-yourself botnet kits that the Russians sell. Lots of people supply them, but it's generally Anyways, so yeah, Java ODAs, the ones that just came out, yeah, they're already in the exploit kits. So,
more buttons anyway, to play with, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's a joke at this point, right? That's why our digital dojo is what it is when I get to it tonight. Next story up, this one is from the Inquirer. A developer in the U.S. Analog actually sent me this story. It's all over the place, though. A developer in the U.S. was caught outsourcing his own job to China so he could spend the day watching cat videos on the internet, reports a case study from Verizon. No, this is not a joke. A developer for an anonymous critical infrastructure company, referred to as Bob, was actually caught outsourcing his own work to China so he could spend all day browsing the web, something that Verizon noticed after it was alerted to odd activities on the firm's VPN logs. They noticed somebody from China logging into their VPN on a daily basis and committing code. We received a request from a U.S.-based company asking for help in our understanding of some anomalous activity that they were witnessing on the VPN logs, Verizon explained. Plainly stated, the VPN log showed that Bob logged in from China, yet the employee is right there sitting at his desk staring into his monitor. Further investigation from Verizon revealed that Bob's web browsing history, which showed just how he spent his 8 hours, a typical day for the lazy developer consisted of surfing Reddit for 2 hours, an hour on eBay, 2 hours on Facebook, and LinkedIn updates. What's more, Bob apparently received great performance reviews from the unnamed company and was considered an expert in C, C++, Perl, Java, Ruby, PHP, and Python. You're probably thinking that Bob was a bit of a dude, but it wasn't just one company he was scamming. Verizon discovered he did the same thing across multiple companies, earning several $100,000 a year. Unsurprisingly, Bob was promptly fired once the scheme was discovered. I'm not sure why. This guy's a great management material.
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing here is that we see some CEO up there thinking, you know, this guy has one-upped me, you know, I have to get rid of him, he's gunning for my job. And I'm with you. I think that they should have cut his salary, number one, let him continue managing all of his projects that he was doing, because, one, they were all on time, they were all good, and the company was making money off of what he was doing, so I don't see how it was really that big of a deal. I mean, it's not like the company was paying for these China workers. He was paying for them.
Well, the reason it shows up is because this guy was giving access to these Chinese development companies to the company's VPN.
Right. So I understand that side of things, but
there's certainly a security issue there. But, yeah, from a management side point, that's just great. I mean, so I don't know, Laura, have you ever outsourced your own job to China?
No, but my current job is being outsourced to India, so I'm not going to have a job thanks to that, but that's me.
Sorry to rub salt there. Let's just quickly move on to the next story. Rocket Snap! let's see, this one's from 3DERS.org. It's a website devoted to 3D printing. On Wednesday, Congressman Steve Israel stated on his website, or issued a statement on his website calling for a renewal of a revamped Undetectable Firearms Act that includes a ban on 3D-printed plastic high-capacity magazines. Last week, Defense Distributed made another test fire with a 3D-printed AR magazine, and it was a success. They tested an ammunition magazine for an AR semi-automatic rifle, loading and firing 86 rounds from the 30-round clip. Representative Israel said background checks and gun regulations will do little if criminals can simply print high-capacity magazines at home. 3D printing is a new technology that shows great promise, but it also requires new guidelines. Law enforcement officials should have the power to stop high-capacity magazines from proliferating with a Google search. Wow. That is just a quote. This is not the first time Israel has commented on the wiki weapon and 3D printed gun. It is just a matter of time before these three-dimensional printers will be able to replicate an entire gun. And the congressman said that the congressman said at a news conference at a security checkpoint in Long Island MacArthur Airport in December. He said he will introduce the law's renewal in Congress to renew a federal ban on plastic guns that can evade detection in airports, including weapons made partially with 3D printers right out of Star Trek. Really? Defense Distributed responded to Israel yesterday with the following post on their blog, and I quote, "Good fucking luck." Defense Distributed founder Cody Wilson told Forbes journalist Andy Greenberg that in the week that files for the three pieces of the group printable magazine have been downloaded from its website more than 2,200 times already. Wilson says Congressman Israel's call to ban the device will only increase that steady flow of downloads. "I love it. It's so reactionary," he said when they reached him by phone. "I hope he gets tons of attention for his push and that people will download hundreds of thousands of magazines." My own personal response here, anyone want to bet that congressman has never done a Google search for a zip gun? My God, we better ban pipes! I mean, my God. You want to have some fun, 3D printer or not, just do a Google search for zip gun. You will find the plans to build one out of parts you can get at Home Depot, and it'll fire a 22, it'll fire a 22 round, in like the top 10 of the search, I promise.
For that matter, just take some pipes, take some duct tape, put them together in a nice big old bundle, shove 22 shells in them, and take a hammer.
I would actually find the instructions online and follow those, because analog's method sounds hilarious. If you're going to do analog's method, film it and put it on YouTube so we can laugh at you.
I was in the military. We tried things.
We got bored, so we tried to figure out what was the dumbest thing we could use to fire a bullet. I like it.
We did. You gotta have something to pass the time, because they won't let you fraternize with the women.
Oh. So yeah, we've already got our first congressman calling for a ban on 3D printed guns. Yay!
Yay!
Thanks for not understanding how the technology works. So, let's see. Next story up is from The Verge. This one's just funny. Microsoft's popular Security Essentials antivirus software has failed to gain the latest certificate from the AV-Test Institute. In anti-malware testing against a range of products, AV-Test failed to certify OnLab version 3, Internet Security 8, Microsoft Security Essentials 4.1, and PC Tools Internet Security 2012, out of a total of 25 different vendors. Microsoft's own antivirus software failed to adequately protect against zero-day malware attacks, scoring an average of 71% versus the industry average of 92%. Microsoft says it has conducted a rigorous review of the results and has found that 0.0033% of Microsoft Security Essentials users were impacted by the malware samples not detected during the tests. Microsoft appeared to challenge the results and the antivirus testing in general, claiming that it's difficult for independent anti-malware testing organizations to devise tests that are consistent with real-world conditions. Not really. You just put the computer on the internet and see what happens. The software makers said that it prioritizes customer impact, but that 94% of the 28 missed zero-day samples don't represent what our customers encounter. Because Microsoft knows what their customers encounter. I think Microsoft
don't question Microsoft.
So they're just spying on everybody. And it's like, well, what do you think all the cameras in those Kinects are for? Nevertheless, Microsoft says it's committed to reducing the 0.0033% impact rate to zero. In other words, somebody said Security Essentials wasn't that good, and Microsoft was like, no, your test is wrong. So I thought that was hilarious, actually.
So they're supposed to be tested, not connected to the network. Got it.
Well, apparently they're doing this in a lab environment. It's like, no, you want to test the antivirus? Plug a raw, install their antivirus on an unpatched XP machine, install, you know, just hook it right into a raw internet connection, waiting to see how long before the thing starts sending spam. I mean, if it's longer than 20 minutes, then you've got a good antivirus on your hands. Because generally, an unpatched like XP Service Pack 0, plug it on a raw internet connection, no firewall or anything in front of it, you're looking at less than a minute before the thing's owned. Because there's that much automated crap out there just constantly spending, you know, looking for stuff. So, I just thought it was kind of childish that Microsoft was going back and forth with this testing company over the results. So, let's see. Last story I have for tonight, and this one is hilarious, from Torrent Freak. There can be little doubt, file sharing networks can turn up some of the most amazing pieces of media to be found anywhere on the face of the planet. In addition to all the latest movies and music from just about every musician ever, BitTorrent and other similar networks play host to lots of documents, rare footage, document caches, long discontinued pieces of software, and other digital rarities. But of course, in addition to all these undoubted jewels, P2P networks also have the ability to turn up the unexpected. As one poor teacher in France learned the hard way last Friday, the woman, a kindergarten teacher at the school in France, decided that she would acquire a movie for her pupils to watch in class. Like many people these days, she turned to the internet and downloaded what she thought was a cartoon suitable for her 3 to 5 year olds. It didn't go well. After turning up at class, she played the file in question, but immediately left the room to answer a telephone call, leaving the children to enjoy it alone. However, she returned 5 minutes later, at the most. She realized that the file she had downloaded was not the cartoon she expected, but full-on porn. A spokesperson at the school described the disaster as extremely regrettable accident. Understandably, some parents are claiming that their children were shocked by what they had seen.
Like, my mommy and daddy do that.
In the living room.
See, and that's just educational.
They made me hold the camera.
Ah! Thank you, Analog. As highlighted by our friends at Numerama, the error is an easy one to make, especially when file sharing clients that do not rely on websites to index their content. On these networks, files are identified by a hash, but can be officially renamed by pretty much or by anyone to pretty much anything. This means that malicious users can easily change the title of a porn movie to resemble that of a Disney classic, setting in motion a chain of events such as the one detailed above. It is unclear which file sharing system the teacher used, but the same error is unlikely to have taken place if she'd placed her face in BitTorrent. I love Torrent Freak. It's like, no, use our system. She had done so, she would have visited an indexing site such as the Pirate Bay, where not only would the porn be found in a section of its own, but the users of the site would have already flagged the file as badly named and had it removed by the site's moderators. But of course, the porn industry doesn't make things any better. Fancy watching Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs? Well, if you please take care, there's an adult movie of exactly the same name. Beauty and the Beast? Check. Little Red Riding Hood? Check. Somebody looked into this. It's like, is there a porn named Little Red Riding Hood? There is! I mean, the moral of the story is, if you don't want a nasty surprise, use an indexing site where possible, read the comment section thoroughly, and if you want to be doubly sure, paste the hashtag of the file downloader into Google. Whatever happened to just maybe checking the video before you put it on play for kindergartners, but
I think you'd do that somewhere along the line.
You know, just open the video up and make sure it actually is what you think it is if you're getting it from a file sharing site. Not a bad idea.
Even not to just to make sure it's decent quality, too.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you know, you get some cam and somebody in the background, you know, making noises or something, that always sucks.
Which kind of makes it like an unbelievable story because she didn't check it. Who doesn't check something before they show it to somebody? That is weird.
Kindergarten teacher. Yeah.
All right, I guess, but that just sounds very strange.
It's France. I mean, wouldn't they just like have to go down to a beach to see that? I mean,
yep.
Although, to be fair,
well, that's next week's field trip.
Oh, okay.
They're just getting them ready for it.
To be fair, I occasionally get DMCA files sharing complaints for porn movies, and some of the names of those are just... When you see Magnum Anal, it's just like, oh my god.
Tell him what where it came from. Who sent it to you?
Oh, yeah, our director got it, so he forwarded it on with the comment of, ouch. You know, it's just like,
wow.
They always get the really good ones. It's always the really funny ones that go to somebody else's email account, not the designated complaint address. Anyways.
I wonder if they did that on purpose.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do, because they want to get attention drawn to it. So. Anyways, I believe it's time for this. Why is it not working? I'm not hearing the soundboard. Are you good?
You a long time.
There it is. Somebody is leaving the soundboard in a strange state. I'm going to have to talk to the other show hosts. Let's try that again.
Me love you a long time.
All right. For Digital Dodgers tonight, I thought we would talk about how to build a safer browsing setup. The original discussion topic for tonight, I was going to talk about all the Java vulnerabilities that have been found lately and how the Department of Homeland Security has just said turn Java off. And, you know, that's going to be ignored by everyone who plays Minecraft or has to connect to, like, any enterprise system ever. Because a whole crap ton of enterprise software is written in Java, and you don't even get a choice about what version of it you run. So, I thought I would go into some detail of how to at least try to secure your browser. It's like if you have to run IE5 and Java 3 because you've got some application that requires it and you don't really get a choice about what software you install. Yeah, it's not a fun time. So I thought we could go over some ideas I had for securing your browsing environment a little bit. The first thought that actually comes to mind is sandboxing. I've got a couple of programs here. Sandboxy is probably your go-to program for this. It is a small program that, like its name suggests, it creates a sandbox. Pretty much it runs a program kind of the same way a debugger runs a program, except it hooks all the hard drive calls. So anytime it tries to write to the disk, instead it Sandboxy copies whatever file it's trying to write to and the full folder structure. So let's say you get something trying to write to, say, Windows Sys32. Well, in whatever folder you told Sandboxy is the sandbox for, say, your web browser, it'll make a, you know, Windows Sys32 folder and then copy whatever file is trying to be modified into that folder and then modify copy. So malware installs itself into a sandbox where it's not going to do any good versus installing itself into your Windows system where it's going to be a nightmare. If you don't know what you're doing with it, it is a pain in the butt to use because your downloads never end up where you're telling them to go. They always end up, you know, in the sandbox. And the other big problem with this program is you kind of have to remember to use it. If you don't remember to start your browsers in the sandbox, it doesn't really do you any good. So I've used Sandboxy. I actually quite like it. I use it all the time. It's a very nice program for isolating your browser because literally every driver, everything it tries to do goes to the sandbox. So it's also a good way of seeing if the website's infected. You start with a fresh website, a fresh sandbox, and go to the website in question, and you just look at all the files that you modified. If all you get is a bunch of the cache files, then it's probably fine. But if you start seeing like your Windows folder or program files or something else showing up in the sandbox, that's maybe one of the sites you were hitting is not so nice. So if you've got your own website you're managing, it might be a good idea to hit it with a fresh sandbox every once in a while just to make sure that it's not pwned. Now, there's an alternative to Sandboxy. Sandboxy costs money. There's a free version of it, but it starts nagging you after 30 days. It's not terribly expensive, but, you know, it is not free. Now, there is a free one from Cyrix called Browser in a Box, and it's very similar to Sandboxy. I've not actually used it. I downloaded it with the intention to try it out, but I just didn't get a chance to play with it. It actually has an enterprise edition for doing tunnels to a corporate proxy. So if you're setting up a network and you have to get to one of those enterprise applications that needs an old-ass browser, you can use this browser in a box to set it up so that if you're not in the sandbox, you can only get to your internal applications. And then if you're in the sandbox, you can get out onto the internet. So it just kind of helps to secure things when you have to run, you know, unpatched, broken software. So it's a German company. The download page is in German. And they've got one of those stupid forms to fill out before you can get to the download. But I do know from experience you can, in fact, fill it out with nothing but bullshit. And you can get the download link. I know a lot of them, they want that valid email address because they actually email you the links to keep you from just putting in BS. But this one, you can still actually still enter BS. But it is a lot of it is in German. So, yeah, there's that. I don't know, has anybody else ever played with the sandboxing apps besides me?
I've played a little bit with them in the past. Not a lot. Just kind of playing around with them, looking for possible alternatives. But
yeah.
I find sometimes it's a little bit of a headache.
Yeah, that's generally the problem with most of these security measures. It's always a headache. So
I just run a live distro of Linux. That's if I'm going to try to do something, that's about all I do.
And that's actually my next suggestion: use a different operating system. Linux is really not a target, and anymore. It's not very hard to use. It used to be. But these days, you go get you a modern copy of Ubuntu, Linux Mint, Fedora, whatever. It's not really all that hard to work out how to use it. And if you do all your more dangerous browsing on that, you're fine, right? Because almost everything's targeting Windows. So it's really funny when you're on a Linux system and you get the fake antivirus pop-up, you know, from a web page and it's wrapped in Firefox because the JavaScript didn't work right. And, you know, it's just showing you, like, the Windows control panel for Windows XP on Ubuntu. It's like, I wonder if you're trying to scam me. So, and running Linux inside a virtual machine will actually let you use the browser without having to reinstall or reboot and maintain snapshots. I believe we've talked about that one on the show before. And VirtualBox and VMware Player are both free. Linux is free. Sandbox IE is not. So if you're willing to do the work to set up a virtual machine, it's free. So another more free idea I had was to go hit up the portable apps site, and you can actually pull down a portable copy of Firefox, a portable copy of Chrome, and if my volume goes all to hell, it's because I have a cat walking across a mixer board. Hang on just a second. Sorry about that. Do any of my volume levels sound out of whack? The cat started walking across the mixer. It's like,
you're good.
Okay. But you can download portable versions of Chrome or Firefox, and they're isolated from your installed versions. So, I mean, you don't have to put them on a thumb drive. Just put them on your desktop folder, right? Especially if you're, say, on a workbox and you don't have administrator access, you can still download the portable apps and run them a lot of the time. And so you could get a couple versions of the portable app and maybe in one of them go in and disable Java and Firefox and Java and Flash and, you know, the Adobe plugin and all the stuff that's going to get you pwned. And then you have one that you use when you hit a site you trust and it needs one of those things. And then you have the other one you just use for regular browsing so you keep the machine from getting pwned. You can actually do the same trick if you just, like, you can install both Chrome and Firefox on a machine. One of them go in and disable all the dangerous plugins and the other one you don't. So, if you have multiple browsers on the same machine, you can pull that same trick. So, I don't know. What do you guys, have any other ideas on securing a web browser? So that, you know, if you're going to click install the plugin that Facebook wants so you can watch this movie of whenever the hell that you don't get owned.
Use someone else's computer.
There you go. I like that suggestion.
The biggest one I do lately is I run Chrome and Firefox. So.
Yeah. So, actually, a lot of those Chrome anymore. Firefox does it too, but they're pretty good about hitting the Google malware list, and generally they're fairly quick at blocking sites. They're not perfect at it, so you don't trust that. But it's handy, you know. It's like, you know, got more reported malware on the site. As long as it's not a site you know is clean, that's kind of frustrating. But I mean, there's some steps you can take there, especially with all the Java stuff floating around here lately. Most people, you know, even though everybody says, "Oh, you got to disable Java," most people can't. especially on enterprise machines, because they've got software they've got to hit, or they just really want to play Minecraft. So, you know, for some people, uninstalling Java is just, like, not an option. So,
I have anyways, to play Minecraft.
Well, yeah, I mean, my God, not play Minecraft? Anyways, so that's pretty much all I've got for tonight. Always listen to the stream. We're working on it a lot lately. Big has recruited a lot of new artists. We're always looking for new music. And, of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. We're a bit early tonight. We're actually finishing the show about when we normally start. So, sorry about that. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. NR7 every other Monday. Is that what it gotten to?
That's every other. I have stuff that'll be every week, but it's pretty much whether or not I have stuff to review. It's kind of critical for a review show to have stuff to review.
I'm sure we can come up with some bullshit to review. So NR7, whenever somebody hits BSV with a cattle prod, of course, always hit up the Galaxy 15 radio site. We just, as I touched on top of the show, we've just recently redone it. It's quite pretty. It's all gussied up. We're still adding content to that. We've got a lot of content missing, but the major stuff is there. So, of course, hit up the feedback form. We'd like feedback. And the subreddit. So, that's pretty much all I've got for tonight. And I forgot to pick out some closing music. I better find something quick, huh?
We shall now fill time. I can't make music.
That's okay, because Big has conveniently been sorting the music as he's adding it. So why don't we put in this, what looks good here. He's put quite a bit of new stuff in. Here we go. How about Axis? Into the World looks good. That's a 7-minute track. Let's find something a little shorter. Let's go with Perturbulator Nightmare Interlude to close out the show tonight.
This is the emergency broadcast system. Stand by for further information.